Hi, everyone. It's your podcast host, Jim Andrews, here with a reminder that the Ticket Manager Partner Summit is back. We'll be getting together in person on October 17th this year at the Times Center in New York City. This is a free, invitation-only event where hundreds of business leaders across the world's most influential brands in sports, sponsorship, live events, and ticketing gather to make great connections and share valuable information. Approved attendees enjoy exclusive networking events, insightful panels, and exciting celebrity speakers, all for free. Are you interested in attending? Just go to ticketmanager.com for details on how to apply. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Ticket Manager All Access Interview Series. I'm your host, Jim Andrews. As we conclude year three of the podcast, and before 2024 gets fully underway, it's a great time to look back and recall some of the ideas and insights shared by our podcast guests over the past 12 months. We had so many fantastic industry leaders visit with us in 2023 that it was difficult to choose just a few to highlight. And that's a great reminder that if you missed any episodes, I urge you to go back and take a listen to any and all of our guests representing brands, properties, agencies, and service providers. I've divided this best of episode into four segments. In the first, we have three guests who all offered their unique takes on the relationship between brands and their property partners, including what rights holders can offer current partners when it comes to executing and activating a partnership, how sellers shouldn't look at brands as underwriters, and what to do and not to do when approaching a prospective sponsor for the first time.
It can be challenging to navigate such a big corporation such as ours to execute small and large programs at pace around the world, multiple different venues and matches, often all happening at the same time. So there is a really important role to play for rights holders to be able to step up and provide solutions to help brands activate, you know, especially when they have large portfolios like we do. And, you know, some of the partners we work with are exceptionally good at that. We do work with sort of activation, resourcing, and funds in sponsorships that we negotiate in terms of the commercial deal itself, because it gives us the flexibility to turn on certain events or activities with the clubs or the federations at pace with a light lift, because we'll be working in one big project, but there are other projects that need to keep moving as well. So working with great agency partners, which we have onboarded recently in order to be more execution agile, as it were, but working also with the rights holders on smart solutions that are quick to deploy, super important for a big corporation like us with a large portfolio.
One of the things I've always found challenging in the partnership world, and always felt very, very cognizant of the hard part of my colleagues' jobs in partnerships, is often it's this idea of, well, do you have a partner for me? Because I can't then do this if not. And I've never believed like that's the way the relationship should work. So the way that our team and my team works and knows is we want to build a profitable business. And I want that business to be a standalone. And I want you to pretend when we build out the financial modeling, I don't want to put sponsorship on the line. Yeah. Because I don't want to be held that is required in order for us to be able to get this idea across. Instead, what I want to be able to build the business, show its unique value, be able to tell that story and trust in my colleagues, because they've done it over and over and over again, trust them that with time, this business will find its right corporate partner who will be able to amplify that business. Yeah. But it can't happen sometimes simultaneous. You know, it may mean that you have to first launch this business, build it and grow it, and recognize that that may come in year two or three of the business.
Lots of times when people are reaching out to try to start a conversation about whether it's a partnership or a technology or a media buy, they'll say, "Hey, I'd like to get some of your time so you can tell me what I can do for you." And then, you know, so I say, do your homework, you know, spend 45 minutes listening to, you know, if it's a publicly traded company, their most recent earnings report, you can learn a lot from that. And you can understand not only what may be in the mind of the marketing people you're talking to, but what's in the mind of their COO or their CFO or their board, right? Like that is gold. And if you listen to somebody's 45 minute, hour and a half, however long it is, quarterly earnings report, and you say there are things that I know that my company or my property or my technology or my whatever can do to help solve some of those problems, that's where I would start. And come with ideas, don't come with asks, because time is our most precious commodity.
Next, we hear from three guests who raise some provocative questions regarding the challenges facing sports and entertainment marketers. Coca-Cola's Brad Ross discusses the optimal length of partnership contracts. Paragon's Tony Schiller describes changes internally at brands and their impact on sponsorship. And the University of Oregon's Bettina Cornwell cites research that shows authenticity is the key to connecting with fans and consumers.
Some of our contracts are long-term partnership, long-term contracts that we have in place. And while that gives you obviously a good perspective from a relationship point of view, it helps you drive better value in terms of the long-term negotiation and the construct behind that. At the same time, you got to ask yourself, is it flexible enough to allow for changes that come up? Exactly. And I think that's the paradox that you have to deal with is what is the ideal lifespan of a partnership or a contract? You know, I think traditional schools of thought is, you know, the longer the better, because right. You negotiate a long-term deal, you get it at a better price, you're able to negotiate better rights. And, you know, you don't have to go through contract negotiation every year. So absolutely, all those pros are valid. But fast forward 2 years in and a new industry player emerges or things change, your own business strategies change. How do you pivot? How do you adjust? And how are you flexible enough there? And so what I'd like to see from our rights holders, to be honest, is the ability to meet us halfway and be as flexible as possible when either we start to change course or pivot, or the industry itself starts to change or course correct, and how do we maintain our long-term partnership and relationship, which is fundamental and foundational, but how can we move away from just the letter of the contract to finding a win-win in this new space? And some partners are very open to that. Some are fantastic, let me be clear, in terms of saying, we get it, we understand how the landscape's changing, we need to adjust ourselves. Let's figure this out. You had XYZ, now we're going to give you ABC, and you have that conversation and you figure it out together. Some are a bit more jaded in their thinking, and you just have to then deal with that and help educate them and bring them along the way. So there's the balance of the two.
Right.
The flip side, Jim, of course, is getting into like one-year deals might not help you in the long term then. You know, then it's you're in and out. Are you building this sustainable long-term partnership and relationship? So what is that perfect lifespan of a partnership or sponsorship? I don't know if I have the answer, but I think it's more about the intent and the relationship that you build that starts to, you know, become critical in today's day and age. You will be governed by the contract. You will be governed by the long form. That is, you know, that's table stakes. But it's the relationship and how you map it out that I think is where it becomes important. And that's where having an account team on the partner side that actually understands your business, that knows what you're trying to achieve, that's not just trying to push a sales approach, but actually understands, we get it. This is what you're trying to do. These are your objectives. Let's see how we can help you. That for me is where the partnership really is 1+1=3. At the same time, there's a burden on the companies and the partners themselves. We have to do our very best to make sure that our partners know where our focus is, what we're trying to achieve with this, and how we need their help to unlock the value that we know can be there. And so it's a little bit of a dance both ways, but I think that's the beauty of the space we operate in. Because again, if we borrow in the equity from a partner that knows how to connect with their tribe in a way that's authentic and real, how can we support that or be part of that and learn and listen to them? You know, hubris aside, arrogance aside, we need to also listen and learn from our partners, because some of them know our consumers better than we do. Yes, I said it. Some of them do. And that's the role that I think these partnerships play for us in certain cases.
The CMO has so many people coming at him or her with so many opportunities, so many ideas, so many challenges, so many needs. And how do you coalesce all of that with a strategic focus? So that's something that we see a lot, is we have a great opportunity and we have buy-in, but our clients need to secure the buy-in from the CMO. And again, it may take days, weeks, months to get on her or his calendar and help them understand the opportunity. So the velocity of what's happening at any given time is wild.
Yeah.
And
great point.
There also is what's exciting and new evolution in our space is that it used to be that there was a sponsorship person and maybe a person or two in marketing that understood the potential power and impact of sponsorship. Now people in sales and digital and social and PR and experiential and community, they're all understanding the power of sponsorship. And consequently, they're all dabbling in sponsorship. And sometimes that's a tremendous accelerant to making things happen internally. But sometimes that also can be a challenge because people step out of their boxes. They may not have the purview, the resources, or the understanding of what they're potentially unleashing. So there's a lot of people in many companies that want to be involved in sponsorship. And again, that can be a great assist. And sometimes that can be a little bit of a harness to getting things done.
What people want is a genuine relationship. Mm-hmm. They don't want advertising stuck on that hasn't got any relationship to this team or this event, or, and they want to know, how do you have a relationship? What is your history together? What is the meaning that you share? Authenticity will change over time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, insurance companies, they don't really match and fit, but when they've been working with a group for so long, they become part of that ecosystem. And if they communicate about their values, shared values, if they communicate about how the history of the brands working together has gone and things like that, they can develop that authenticity.
How brands evaluate partnership performance is an evergreen topic on the podcast, as well as throughout the industry. And next, we have two companies, one B2C and one B2B, that have long been at the forefront of sponsorship measurement.
What we've tried to do is to build a framework, an evaluation framework that is consistent. Is it the most perfect? I don't know. Is it 100% accurate? I don't know. But it's as close to it as possible right now. What it does do for us is it does allow us to compare apples for apples. So within our portfolio, within our stable, we're able to, one, see partnership X and partnership Y. What did they each drive based on metrics or objectives that we've set out through the same methodology that we've built? So that you're actually being able to get a tangible, comparable data set that's actually showing you what this does. The objectives are also important, Jim, because in some cases we're looking at building a partnership that's going to come to life to really drive weekly plus or drive, you know, immediate consumption of our products. That's one objective. And what that objective looks like and how that comes to life might be different to a partnership that's more focused on, you know, buying or building an asset or a partnership that we can use and leverage for our customer partners. That's slightly different. Or how do we buy or leverage or build an asset or partnership that we use for stakeholder engagement, company reputation? Each of those have a slightly different outlook in terms of what the methodology could be. But we're happy that we've landed now on a set of methods that actually don't only look in isolation at the partnership, but look to see how it drives the business, and it's integrated into our broader business measurement and metric system. So we're actually able to see, you know, as constructively as possible that this partnership or this asset or this sponsorship drove XYZ for our business based on the business metrics and the business measures. We're not coming as the assets or sponsorship team or the sports and entertainment team and saying, oh, look what we did.
Right.
We're integrating it into the business results. And that's, I think, what drives more credibility for our space. It drives more credibility for showcasing the results and the value that this area brings. And I think it shows more integration into really leveraging the power of partnerships and sponsorships to drive the business forward versus something on the fringe that's nice to have.
we have figured out ways to measure, you know, sponsorship, you know, based on the attendee that, you know, was at the event or participated in the sponsored event, their company, their role. And so we track these things in, you know, what we call marketing source. I don't love that market. Actually, now we call it marketing contributed revenue. Okay. So, you know, there's a whole lot of activity that goes into opening an opportunity and closing an opportunity. And a lot of it happens by the, you know, the seller, the business partner,
sure,
working the relationship, getting the right proposal with the right pricing, with the right buyer committee behind it. And marketing has a part to play in that. I'm never going to be the one who says, oh, marketing generated that opportunity for you, because there's a lot that goes into it.
Absolutely.
But we track this stuff so that I can show when we, you know, when we get a decision maker to the US Open into the IBM suite, and we spend 3 hours with them, 4 hours watching tennis, showcasing the IBM technology, putting them on the IBM tech tour down in Arthur Ashe, I can connect that person, you know, with a deal sitting in Salesforce. And then I'll track whether or not how that deal progressed and ultimately closed. That's the nuts and bolts of it. And I have to be able to show that for every sponsorship activity that we do. Now, at the same time, you're absolutely right that there's umbrella awareness that you need to build in the market. So they even know, to my point earlier about reintroducing IBM. So they even know who IBM is.
Right.
And what we do. And, you know, you get a level of that awareness and consideration bump by doing the sponsorships. And we do track that as well. You can't track it really at an individual or account basis,
right,
but you do track it at the overall level. And I tell you, every year we see a bump in awareness of IBM solutions around Masters in the spring, Wimbledon in the early summer, US Open in the late summer, the NFL advertising we do, right? You see these bumps and spikes in awareness and consideration.
Finally, in our last segment, three of our guests offer insights into what's next for sports and entertainment marketers, from innovations in events to digital content to influencer marketing.
We don't want to deliver traditional hospitality and a ticket and a hotel. People have done that for years. Instead, we want to be able to offer the types of moments that allow you to express your fandom in a unique way that's tied to that event. So I'll give you an example. So at our NBA All-Star game, one of the experiences we offer is we offer our fans the opportunity to serve as stand-ins during rehearsals. So you now have fans from around the world pretending to be LeBron James as the pyro goes off and the video boards. And that's an important moment for our live production team. They need to do those testing anyway. But right, now allowing that fan that peek behind the curtain, that's a moment that, one, it's connected to a ticket and connected to meet and greets and connected to on-court access, certainly rounds out. But it's that special moment that makes that experience so unique. And we're offering that across our entire marquee event landscape and think it's going to be a seminal moment for us to connect with some of our most and important and valuable fans around the world. Our fans are craving access and they are craving insight. And so I look at those two lenses and think, does the experience that we're building, does it offer those two things in a way that takes our fan and gives them those two levers? And if it doesn't, it may not be right for the program that we're building. We want to make sure that we are giving our fans opportunities to be able to see, experience, hear from, talk to, live through moments that they could not have gotten otherwise. And that's the bar, because I think it's just so much higher to get somebody off that couch in this new world. And if I'm me as a fan, my bar is higher. And so if we live through that lens, I think it's going to force some really creative vision moving forward.
The biggest category when it comes to a sports team is content, right? And not only just thinking like a media company, but actually producing content and delivering it in interesting ways. And so obviously there's a significant amount of teams producing social media content and delivering that to their fans, which is exciting, and a lot of work going into that across the sports ecosystem. But you can take these content experiences even further, from the point where you can actually create full-length documentaries, follow docs, whether it's historical stories, whether it's current stories about the players leading up to the playoffs and how they're interacting and how they're getting prepared, a whole bunch of story arcs in terms of storytelling to create more content. You could take it even further and take all of the great content that's been produced this year, whether social media, et cetera, and build a linear experience. So you can have a 24/7 experience for that content provider. You can go an even step further and create subscription offerings where you're providing significant behind the scenes content available to your super fan.
We're seeing many new people come into the influencer marketing space. That is kind of surprising. And then you think about it and you're like, of course, they're a brand. But we recently worked with the Premier League when they came to the US and they were looking, you know, their ticket sales in certain areas were not as great as some other places. And so they were like, how can we amplify this? And so we helped them connect with a couple of NFL players who did like videos being like so proud that the Premier League is coming to our home and, you know, go buy tickets. And we've seen that the NFL, we recently spoke to, they have a whole influencer program at the conference that we were at in Chicago. I spoke to one of the local Chicago teams who were thinking about their influencer program. And so I think what's interesting is it obviously makes sense because everyone has a marketing budget, but suddenly, you know, we're seeing almost like our supply is our demand. And that's kind of fun to be able to work with teams, leagues, events. There's an event for the rodeo and we're talking to them about using, and it kind of makes sense because if you're selling tickets or participation or attendance or whatever else, actually we work with Live Golf. And so obviously they're trying to drive eyeballs. It kind of makes sense that they're going to use athletes to do that, whether it's college golfers or whether it's anyone in the local community. So that's one. And then the second is, I think before you used to just talk about influence, like what's their demographic, what's their influence. But now we really need the content to be strong. And there's a massive demand on, you know, it's great that you've got a lot of followers, but if you're not, if your content's not good on social, you never create video, you don't post regularly, you're probably not going to get the brand deals. Definitely a bit of a challenge for us, but also an opportunity because we can then surface, you know, which there's 1,800 athlete players in the NFL. Here are the 20 that do post regularly that get great views on their reels, right? And so it's almost interesting because it's moving away from this idea that I'm going to work with the quarterback and more so to I'm going to work with the person who's the best content creator.
As I said at the start, that was just a small sample of what was discussed and shared by those and the many other guests who joined the podcast this past year. I hope that you enjoyed this highlight reel and that you will join us for more great conversations in the coming year. From everyone at Ticket Manager, thank you so much for watching and listening to the All Access interview series. Cheers.